Mic'd Up, Our Women Entrepreneurs is brought to you by Scottish Edge and is supported by the Royal Bank of Scotland. More details on Royal Bank of Scotland's accredited support for women in business a little later.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Mic'd Up with me, Alison Walker. I'm out and about again, and this time I'm kind of in the outskirts of Edinburgh, a little way out of the city centre, to talk to Cara Skill, who's the co-founder of Social Stories Club. Now, it's a social entrepreneur business. So I think, first of all, Cara, if you don't mind, just explain to us what that actually is.
So a social enterprise, there's no legal definition of it. And if you ask lots of different people within the industry, they'll all have different ideas of what is allowed and is not allowed to be a social enterprise. But in my definition, it's a business which is there to create a social impact and is dedicated and led by its purpose. We are a community interest company, which is a legal structure. And many people believe because we're that, we can call ourselves a social enterprise. And some people do believe unless you are a KIC, which it's called, then you're not a proper social enterprise.
So is it just the difference between profit and non-profit? Or is it like a charity? What?
So the idea is between social enterprises is that they generate the money through trade, which is then used for good causes, often in a very financially sustainable way. So it's not reliant on donations of food, volunteers, time or money.
Right. So take us back then to the start of all of this. What happened? How did it all come about?
Yeah, well, I was a student and so was my co-founder Ayush at the University of Edinburgh. And we were entrepreneurs in our mindset and in our energy. And we loved the idea of entrepreneurship. But we were feeling quite frustrated with many of the traditional models. And we knew we wanted to use our skills as a force for good. And we were both very involved in charities separately. And it was when I was on my year abroad in Canada that I came across the term social entrepreneurship and social enterprise, and that you could create, using entrepreneurship, a business which is dedicated to social impact. And it was like a light bulb that went off in my head. I was just amazed that this concept wasn't being taught more widely, and I hadn't heard of these amazing businesses that were out there. And I was getting introduced to them on a daily basis, and I was just filled with this excitement and hope. It gave me this vision for the future. Imagine if businesses could lead the way in solving some of the world's biggest challenges. So I brought this excitement back to Edinburgh, and I was talking in Ayush's kitchen. He was one of the highest performers at the University of Edinburgh, and he hadn't got a graduate job yet. And he said, "What are you gonna do after?" And I said, "Oh, I'm gonna start a social enterprise."
What were you studying?
Business marketing. And he was a international business with finance. And so it was a really quick conversation. I went, "I'm going to start a social enterprise." And he said, "What's a social enterprise?" And I told him what it was. And I could see in his face that same excitement that I had. And we didn't know exactly what we were going to do, but we knew we had to introduce everyone to these amazing businesses out there. And that was the mission, because nobody had heard of them.
So what was the next stage? Because there's a big difference and a big leap between having the idea and thinking it's a great idea and being inspired, but actually to making it, moving and making it happen.
Yeah, I guess that part happened very fast and very slow. Like, we developed the idea that we wanted to move with, which is, although it's been tweaked, it's still very similar. Gift boxes with lots of products inside them, which each support different social causes and have these amazing stories. So we were finding teas that were educating girls in tea growing regions, and socks for every pair you bought, a pair was given to a homeless person. And we wanted to create the most exciting gift. So if you knew about social enterprise but your friend didn't, you could introduce them to this world of social enterprise in the most exciting, fun and positive way. And it was very much that first year, I think we were 20 and 21 years old when we were going through it. We did everything wrong. We jumped to the wrong conclusions. We had the wrong target market. We did all of the analysis that they teach at business school, you know, the PESTEL analysis, the SWOT analysis, thinking that's how you start a business. And we wasted a year, really. But we had a market
stall. But you
learned. Yeah, we learned. We had a market stall in, I think it was a really cold, chilly October. I think it was October morning in Glasgow. And we were there for a couple of hours, and then a lady came onto our market stall. We hadn't sold a gift yet, and she asked about what we did. And we told her, and her face lit up in that same way. And she bought a box for her niece. I still remember her. And she left really happy. And it was just that excitement that we have, sold our first gift. And it was so amazing and exciting. We just couldn't believe our luck. But we realised we got our target market wrong. It was actually women. And it was actually professional women who were wanting our gifts for individuals in their lives, as opposed to students on a subscription model. And it also, we later found out, it was also corporates were really interested as well. So that was the journey. And of course, there's so much that happens, in between. So many mistakes, so many, really late nights, really early mornings.
You still had to try and earn a living as well, did you?
It was really tough. And this is a part that I don't talk about as much because I don't think I deserve any attention from it, because I chose that life. I chose the life where I was offered a graduate job that paid a really nice salary, and I would have taken me to 4 different countries over 2 years. But we lived in an 11 bed flat share, and I lived on £9 a week food budget. And I ate once, maybe twice a day. And I chose that. I didn't have to, and I don't recommend it. I later on realised I couldn't sustain it. It was really miserable.
Gosh, you must have had immense drive and passion for what you did to go through that.
We did. I think it's really deluded belief as well. But we moved back to Edinburgh, and I got a job as a ghost tour guide, taking people around Edinburgh and telling them about all the spooky stories of what used to happen in the Edinburgh vaults. That was fun. Exhausting, but fun.
But that supplemented your
Yes.
other...
And I should have done that from the start. I was far more productive having a part-time job and starting Sexual Stories Club than I was when I was in that 11-bed flat share, which was really miserable. And the stories I have from that are shocking and... I wouldn't want my daughter to be in that situation. And I definitely didn't tell my parents about the reality.
Yeah, I wonder what they would have thought. But taking us through the kind of timeline, what was the timeline from having the light bulb moment to, I suppose, to where you are now, really?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm now 27 and I had the light bulb moment on my 21st birthday.
Right. And what was the key? Was there a key turning point?
It's honestly, it was when you're going through that stage of your life, you have to have a plan in your third, fourth year of uni for after university. And it was very much I was actively looking for my next step of my life. So when social enterprise was introduced to me, that was one light bulb moment. And then on my 21st birthday, I knew, I can start my own social enterprise. Introducing people to it, that was the second light bulb moment. And I guess the third one was when a youth joined. It was a 10-second question, like conversation in our kitchen. There's no strategy behind, are we good co-founders? Do we have really good balancing skills? And we're just so lucky that it worked so amazingly well.
So from selling that first box in Glasgow,
yeah.
What was your next, this is going to work and this is happening? When was that? And what was that like? And what was it?
I think, honestly, I just never believed it wasn't going to work. It wasn't a possibility for me, because if it hadn't worked, I would have still potentially been in that 11-bed flat share, and that wasn't an option for me. So I knew it had to work, and there wasn't any other way. It was going to work. It was just about finding the way. And I do believe that with most things. Like, if you stick at it, if you try different strategies, if you learn from it, if you tweak and adapt, it will work.
So tell us how it does work. We're here in your premises,
yeah.
in Edinburgh, and I've had a little look at in the gift making area or the storeroom, or whatever you'd like to call it. Describe where we are and what actually happens.
Yeah, so we're in the, I've called it many different things, but I think we've settled on the Social Impact Happiness Warehouse.
Oh yes, I love it.
It's in Wester Hills, in Edinburgh, and in here is where all the magic happens. We have a little office, which is where we're currently sitting, upstairs. Then we have the big warehouse below, where there is pallets and pallets high. The warehouse it's not fully full yet, but it's almost there. You saw it earlier. We have, I think 25,000 gift boxes, like just the packaging of the gift boxes ready to go out for Christmas. And a lot of things happen behind the scenes that do with every single business. So you've got sales, marketing, market research, operations, supply chain, packing of the gift boxes. But in terms of people, packing of the gift boxes is what requires most of our teams.
That's the most labour-intensive aspect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. And what is in the boxes?
All these amazing products which tell the most amazing stories.
And where do you find them? And what's the decision-making process for what you put in the boxes?
Lots of people ask us this question, and it's, we just know exactly what we're looking for. So we can see a product and know immediately if it's something we're looking for. But if we had to break it down, it would be a company which has a really great social mission and is led by their values in creating this sort of social enterprise that is leading the way in an area of impact and has that really interesting story. And that can really inspire people because it's the stories in the story booklet which really excite people and make them really get behind the different causes that we're putting forward. And so we've used storytelling as a tool to really help our business. So we're looking for those products on the impact side. But on the other side, they've got to be products people want to receive in a gift box. So people don't want to receive lavender bags, for example. People don't want to receive books or magazines or puzzles. They do want to receive food and drinks and bath items like bath salts and different soaps, for example.
Candles. And have you learned more of this as time has gone on?
We've spoken to so many people. Yeah. And on top of that, we have build your own box features on our website. So you can go onto our website and choose all the different products that you have. So we can see what people pick for others. And we can also see large companies come in and they'll buy 1,000 staff members a link. So they've prepaid for the box and a link so they can go and build their own box. So it's interesting to see when people are picking for themselves as well, how different it is when people pick for others. People tend to pick dark chocolate for themselves and milk chocolate for others. Just really interesting.
Yeah. You do learn a lot about people, don't you?
Yes. And people tend to pick just plainer flavours for themselves and more exotic flavours for others as well.
But when I'm buying presents, I tend to, for contemporaries, I tend to look for things that I like because I know they'll like them.
Yeah. I honestly, when it comes to what people choose, it's really interesting because there's been some bizarre things that people have chosen. People have chosen for themselves the same chocolate six times over. If they've got six products, they'll choose six of the exact same chocolate bar.
And how do you find the suppliers for these things? Is that, do people come to you with that, or do they offer, or are you still actively out there searching?
There's so many suppliers we would love to work with, and we just don't have the capacity to take on anymore.
That's a great thing though.
Yeah, it is a great thing, and it's very different to when we started. When we started, we could barely find any. And it was the ones we found we very much clung on to and had really great relationships with them. But then there's been a lot that have popped up over the years. A lot have had a lot of success over the years, and we've kind of were there with them at the beginning. So it's been a wonderful journey with these social enterprises. We found that people who run social enterprises are the most incredible people. They're lovely, they're smart, they're clever. And, you know, they're there to create good as well.
And have you seen more of them set up as a result of what you've been doing? Have you seen it kind of mushrooming a little bit? Or are you still a bit of a lonely voice in this world?
I don't think I could take credit for other people starting social enterprises. But it's definitely become something now where people understand the term, even if they don't know all the different legals.
The specifics.
Yeah, they don't know the legal structure, etc. They understand a social enterprise is a business that's there for good. So we found that many more people are starting social enterprises. I've worked very closely with Edinburgh Innovations at the University of Edinburgh, and I still continue to do so. I come back and do workshops for them. They're a fantastic team. And the amount of women who are starting businesses increased significantly over the last 7-8 years. And the amount of social enterprises or sustainability focused companies has increased a lot. I run an accelerator for them every summer, and I think it was out of 14 companies this year, 13 had a environmental or social mission, which is fantastic.
Things are changing, aren't they?
Yeah, it was less than half, I think, when I first did it about 4 years ago. So it's just amazing to see, do you know what I mean, how much The students are really caring about this, and they're the only entrepreneurial pool that I have the direct contact with. So I'm really excited for the trajectory that it's on. It's what people are starting to really care about.
And tell me about the role in this over the years of Scottish Edge and the support from that side of things.
So Scottish Edge have been fantastic. We won the social enterprise, I think it was in 2021, if I remember. We won 65K with them. They are just a great team who are just dedicated to helping Scottish companies. And I think we had a lot of rejections from them before we had the acceptance. And they kept saying, many people who get our prizes get rejected over and over. So we kept coming back and coming back and coming back. And it's the range of companies that they support, which has been just fantastic.
I'm certainly finding that out on this podcast journey I've been on. The range and the different types of women, the different types of businesses, the variety and the amount that they've said, we didn't get it first time, but we tried again and we were advised this. And I'm so pleased we didn't get it then because I wouldn't have known what to do with it. And so it's a bit of, they seem to be a fabulous organisation in terms of support at the right times.
Absolutely. And they provide opportunities as well. So I got to meet Kelly Holmes, which was fantastic. And they have lots of networking events where you get to meet other entrepreneurs. So I really recommend.
Because it can be quite a lonely world, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think when I started off, I was far more, extroverted than I maybe am now. And I needed that village around me. I needed a lot of people to go on the journey. And the truth was, I didn't really have that. A lot of my friends who were on the entrepreneurship journey came fully funded by their parents, which wasn't an option for me and Ayush. So it was very much, that was, a lonely part of the journey, seeing your friends going through the journey, but with financial abundance.
Are they still running their businesses?
No.
There you go.
Mostly not. Unfortunately, the cost of living crisis has wiped out so many of our friends' companies, which has
been a difficult time.
Such a shame.
But you've got through that COVID period, which must have been quite challenging, but also actually really important in a kind of weird sort of way that the service you're providing. What was that phase like?
Chaotic. It was very depressing at the start, but corporates then realised that they could use gifting as a way to connect with their staff who are working from home, and they wanted to use a sustainable company. So we really grew during that period as well, of people really liking our ethos. And so it was actually the first part, it was really depressing. And we had zero Mother's Day gifts, which was one of our peak times previous years. And it went on to be, we moved premises, we grew out of it, And then we're now in this warehouse and we grew out of it every Christmas, but we can't have a bigger one just for 2 months of the year. So we make do.
When are your peak times? Presumably Christmas and Mother's Day. What are the other times you look at?
Really, it's Christmas.
Yeah.
And when I say it's Christmas, I mean about 80% of our yearly sales are at Christmas.
So presumably you start really early, so building for that.
Oh, anyway. Yeah, we start building in January for Christmas. Oh, we start preparing in January.
And do you see people changing in their habits at all, or just in terms of, and not in terms of the actual what's in the gift boxes, but just in terms of the level or the quantity? Are people ordering more? Are businesses ordering more? Can you see this trajectory kind of improving as year on year?
Not improving. No. Since the cost of living crisis, right, people are buying cheaper gifts, they're buying less, and businesses are cutting that cost if they can't afford it. So it hasn't, since the cost of living crisis, we have seen a downturn in sales. And like I said, with a lot of our, friends who've ran wonderful businesses, they haven't made it through. And I'm not surprised. It's been so tough for so many companies. We're just grateful that we're still here. And we're here to
just kind of keep stable as the mission at the moment.
Yes. And we're doing fine. It's too early to tell for this Christmas how great it's going to be. And we fingers crossed that we're going to get some large orders from companies, because that's what makes a real difference to us.
I know at the start, Karis, you had it sounds as if it was a very challenging time personally, as well as trying to get things up and running. Are there any other bits of the journey that you've been on that you think, I know you said you always believed in it, but I guess you must have had some low moments and thought, this is hard going.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And not that these are the lowest moments, but the thing I've really struggled with is being a leader when you're a 25-year-old woman who looks like a teenager. I'm now 27, but when I was 25, that was when...
Just in terms of people view you and they make a judgment,
yes,
straight away. Yeah.
That was when...
And you're female.
Yeah, that was when we started having staff, and that was when, you know, we started to grow. And I came into a face with a lot of pushback on that. And it still happens today, and you have to kind of ignore it. But people don't want to talk to me. They want to talk to my manager. They want to talk to my boss.
So still that perception. And
yes, I am the boss. And there's been people we've worked with for a very long time who have assumed I'm the secretary. And they just I can't understand why they would assume that, other than the fact that...
That's quite surprising these days still.
I'm a woman, and between Ayush and I definitely have the loudest voice between us. So I haven't taken the demeanour of being stepped back at all. I'm the one who steps forward. I'm the one who's out doing the events, the talks.
You're very,
yes,
out there.
And there was a time I was on a panel, and I was introduced as the sweet girl who runs a cute little social enterprise. Can you please tell us your story? Where the other men, and they didn't run, not that this matters, but it is slightly relevant to the story, their social enterprises, the two other men ran, were not as financially successful as mine. They were asked very complex questions about the social enterprise industry and trends. And I was asked, please tell us your story. And it just felt like I was being, treated very differently.
I guess your response to all of that must have been, that's making me stronger and that's making me work harder and more determined than ever.
I think it has both that effect and the slight imposter syndrome
yeah.
effect, because I do a lot of teaching entrepreneurship, teaching marketing, storytelling, how to engage audiences. And I find I'm always met with an audience with their arms folded. And just because of the way I look, I have to prove to them that I'm worthy of being on that stage.
Well, I get that more than you know, because when I started the BBC, I was the only woman working in football. I got used to be sent to the lower league games because because I was a woman. But we're talking 30 years ago. This is why I'm quite surprised to even to hear this now, you know, all these kind of decades later, that there's still this prevailing attitude.
Absolutely.
In the world. And I don't know what you do about that, apart from just keeping getting out there and showing people, you know, and then hopefully in time it will start to change a little bit.
Well, one thing that we've done, and I'm not proud of this, but it's what we've had to resort to. I'm really good at sales. I'm really good at it. But we've met so many clients who don't want to trust buying such a large order from someone who looks like they're 14 years old. So we've removed me from being the face of sales, and we've trained Ayush up on sales so he can be the face, because the questions they were asking when it's me is all
That's
about
very
reliability.
Frustrating.
Yeah. They want to know, for me, they want reassurance, they want references, they want reliability. And we can give them all that. We can say, all these big companies have used us and are raving about us. We've sent thousands and tens of thousands of gifts to over 100 corporates across the UK, and they think we are fantastic. They don't want to hear that from someone who looks like a teenager. They would, Ayush is younger than me, but he looks significantly older than me. They want to hear that
does
from
that,
him.
How does that make you feel? That's really compromising you as an individual, though, as a...
It's one of those things where it's rubbish, but I've made this decision having this information, and at the end of the day, we have to make sales to keep chugging along, and that's a decision.
So it's about the bigger picture,
yeah,
for you in the business.
Yeah, and I'm a really good salesperson. I've been professionally trained on it as well. We're having to put aside my skills because of...
Yeah, but they say about sales that people are either, no matter the training, people are either good at sales or they're not. So, you know, even training somebody to do better at sales doesn't, they might not, it might not be their thing. necessarily. Yeah. So the people have got different skill sets, haven't they?
I think with Ayush, it's become his thing.
Right, he's
so good at customer service. He cares so much about all the details
that
they love him and they trust him. And they see how much he's excited for this, that he's just able to gain rapport. Whereas I'm a bit more, you know, gaining the really personal relationships with people just comes very naturally for me to make friends.
So what is the next stage? Where are we now? What's the next stage? What's the next kind of thing you're looking at? We talked about stability in the current kind of financial situation in the country at the moment, but you'll always be thinking ahead because that's what businesses do.
Yes, I think when we were about, you know, maybe 20, 23, 24 years old, we had the 5-year plan, we had the 10-year plan, but COVID comes along, Brexit comes along, cost of living crisis comes along. We just get to the next quarter and we plan for the next quarter because there's so much that happens. It's so unpredictable that we've just found all plans have gone out the window. And we feel we've been so lucky that we have the amazing customers who keep coming back and they make the effort to spread the word of mouth, which helps us get the sales we need to keep continuing along as well, which is just fantastic. So for us, Christmas is a really big thing every year.
And do you bring extra people in for to help you? Because obviously it's a small business. You've
absolutely.
Got maybe half a dozen normally. And then what's the difference?
We a team probably goes up to 13 people. That's what we had at previous Christmases. So, yeah, the team really grows during the Christmas period. It has to because we have to pack. And we hire individuals with barriers to employment who pack the gifts in the warehouse downstairs.
You hire them from where?
So hire individuals with barriers to employment. The way we've gone about this is we've gone to the job centre and we've just asked them, who do you recommend? Because there's many laws about positive discrimination. And if we want to, you know, give the job to somebody, for example, who doesn't have English as their first language, that's where do you put that job applicant out if, you know, they can't, if somebody can't read to see it. So we found the very best method is to go down to the job centre and just have a chat with them. They know us there. They know the sort of, people we like
to.
Yeah, and that's been the very best way we've found recruiting.
I think I know the answer to this already, but what... What do you love about all this? What is it that keeps you going and drives? Because running something like this is 24/7.
I think it's just the working with the team and having that community around you. But it's the stories that really inspire me. And I've done a lot of research and work on storytelling as a tool. And it's fascinating because I've seen...
Well, I'm a journalist, so I completely get that.
I've seen and understand how storytelling can change belief systems, how storytelling can evoke emotion. And when people make decision by emotion, that's a really powerful tool. So I'm actually writing a book. I have the reading and writing age of a 9 and 11-year-old with my dyslexia. But I am halfway through writing a book on the use of storytelling as a tool to improve our lives.
If there's one story that you could relate to us about one aspect of your business, I don't know, it's a story about tea pickers in Ceylon or something, is the one that really resonated with you over the last few years that you can tell us?
I think the one that really resonated with me was Ayush is from India and he came over here when he was 17 for university. And there was a social enterprise that's from India that we have in our boxes, and it's called Dalit Candle. Now, I'd never heard of the Dalit community, but in the caste system in India, they are on the bottom of the caste system.
Right. And they are the lowest.
And for 4,000 years, they've been referred to as the untouchables, so you cannot touch them. And in society, they are only given the dirty jobs.
And that's still the case.
Yeah, it's still the case today. And... You'd think that there'd be a big movement fighting for these people, but you just don't really hear about it. I had never heard about it. And these people are conditioned to believe that's where they belong as well. So what the Dalit company do, the Dalit Candle, is they teach them to make something beautiful, the little beautiful clay pots with little beeswax candles in. And the proceeds go to educating the children, because if they can get an education, then they can get out.
They move up.
And they can move up and have great opportunities in the world. So I think that benefits the whole family. It benefits the parents who are given a purpose and, you know, shown what they can do with their skills. And I think that's just such a wonderful company. And I think because it's so close to our heart, because it's India where Ayush grew up and where all his family lives, that story really resonated with me.
God, and the feeling of making a difference must be a really good feeling, is it?
Yeah, it's a it is a good feeling. I just don't really take credit for it, you know.
But we should, you know. It's an amazing story, and to have got to this point and not given up either, and faced some of the challenges that you have. Thank you so much for telling us all about it. I'm desperate to get one of these gift boxes now. I know what I'm going to get people for Christmas. There you go.
Thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me.
That was brilliant. Thank you.
Our Women Entrepreneurs is supported by the Royal Bank of Scotland, providing accredited specialist support for women in business today and every day in the form of free help, expertise and guidance. Whether you want to chat with one of the local enterprise managers, are interested in the Accelerator programme, or would benefit from a mentor session on the Women in Business mentoring platform Mentor Match, go to rbs.co.uk/business and search Women in Business to find out more. Meanwhile, keep an eye and an ear out for the next episode of Our Women Entrepreneurs on Mic'd Up, coming soon. Thanks for listening.